Hi, everybody. Going to do some video for you today. Hopefully, provide some value to everybody. And I appreciate everybody being in the group. I appreciate all the support and the fact that everybody is tuning into these videos. We're getting a lot of responses, and it really brings a lot of pleasure to all of us that we're able to help you guys perform better and understand this job a little bit better legally and with the criminal mindset as well. First thing I want to say before we start is I know that yesterday we posted a video regarding one of our members' motor vehicle stops where he removed somebody and put him in the front seat of the car. Now, I know this is something uncommon. It's never been seen in some areas of the country, but it is extremely common, and you would see this tactic being used in most parts of the country. There's a lot of criticisms behind it, but not everything's correct. And just so you know, that video that you saw, and I'm not saying everything's correct about that. I'm saying everybody's got different tactics and way to do things. It is not an incorrect tactic to use it. Sometimes we have to trade off certain things for other things. Essentially, having anybody step out of a car could be dangerous in itself and vice versa, or leaving them in the car can be dangerous. There's so many different perspectives you can take. So let's use the training tools that we provide you here to learn how other people are doing it. And let's pay attention to what we're paying attention to in these videos, such as facial expressions, body language, chopping up stories, all that jazz. It's easy to sit and cast judgment about what you think or what, but it's really irrelevant. And I appreciate and welcome discussion, but to pose opinions and, you know, make other people feel like they're assholes for no reason, it's kind of childish. So understand that you're going to see different things that are unorthodox you may have seen before. I mean, guys, it was weird when I started asking people to step out of cars at my agency. People are like, why are you asking people to step out of cars? I'm like, well, because we're doing interdiction work. We're doing police work here. So let's not be the judgment to each other in the group. Let's all just learn from each other. So with that being said, I want to move forward. The world is speaking to me on what a video should be. I've done videos on this in the past, or what this video should be. And of course, recently I've had a few people ask me about random license plates. Matter of fact, today, two phone calls by themselves about random plate checks. One yesterday too. So I know there's a lot of new members to the group. You haven't seen these videos before. If you want to search stuff, you have questions, you can go to the search function on this group. It's real easy to use. You can search in the group. We try to employ a lot of language to make it more searchable on every different ground that you can search on. Hopefully, it'll keep it relevant to you. Now, the first thing I want to talk about is random plate inquiries. First of all, my applause to anybody who goes out and tries to do proactive police work, especially when you've never been trained or know how to do proactive police work. If you're running a random plate checks or an ALPAR, just know that there's a more efficient way to go about identifying criminal motor vehicles and having good motor vehicle stops and having more quality arrests and having a higher ratio of arrests per motor vehicle stop. But if you happen to be running one of these things or depending on an ALPAR, and let's say it hits for a licensed driver who has their license expired or a suspended driver. So it has to do with the registered owner and the person who is driving it. I'm not talking about the cars unregistered, the registration suspended, other issues. Literally, you run the plate, it comes back and it says, for example, the registered owner is suspended. Now, if you can make a matchup prior to making the stop here in New Jersey, you can't stop that car. But if you can't see inside the car, the courts at least allow you to stop the car. Now, when you walk up to the car, and maybe you have me who's a registered owner and I'm suspended, but there's a blonde female driving, namely my wife. I don't have warrants for my arrest. Can you proceed on with the motor vehicle stop? And the answer is no. You have to terminate at that junction, right? You can't compel identification at that time. You're not allowed to. I know some people have read State v. Donis. I'm going to go over that a little bit and think differently, but you can't. You're not allowed to continue on with that motor vehicle stop. You must cease and desist at that junction. Now, let's take those same circumstances. If you walk up to the car and you have made the observation that the person who's a registered owner and suspended is not the person driving, but you see something in plain view or you smell something in plain smell, are you legally to be where you're supposed to be, a legal vantage point to smell that? Yes, you don't have to cease and desist at that junction if you smell marijuana or see a shell casing or see a wrapper for CDS or a needle, whatever it may be. You're still legally within your bounds. The problem is if you continue to push it and then you come across that thing, you're now into the fruits of the poisonous tree. Want to hear one simple fix on how to not have to deal with this or a suppression issue? Because somebody sent me in something today that they're having a suppression issue with this. And I'm surprised that, you know, this person didn't know any better. I'm not picking on you. I'm pretty sure you went to my training. I know a lot of people, it's hard to retain so much information in 2 days. Here's a simple way to fix that. If you run a plate or whatever it may be, and you're coming back with a suspended driver or an unlicensed driver or expired licensed driver, and that's what the stop's going to be for, follow the car, know your motor vehicle law, and find a reason to stop it outside of just relying on that computer in your car. What do I mean? I don't know. If they have a license plate frame that obstructs or obscures the plate of the car, whatever it may be, maybe they didn't use their turn signal properly in accordance with your turn signal requirements. Maybe they did something weird, but just try to follow them and develop a motor vehicle violation to tack onto that. So when you walk up to the car and it's not the same person, you don't have to cease and desist and walk away, especially if you're doing pretextual stops and determining that the vehicle you're stopping is something of greater interest than just a typical traffic violation. So that's my advice on that right there. You guys can use it in the field, and that goes for everybody across the country. And here's what it says in State versus Donis for New Jersey. It says, regarding license plate checks, the court said when a lookup reveals that the owner's license to drive is suspended, that information is sufficient to give rise to a reasonable suspicion that the vehicle is being driven in violation of motor vehicle laws and to warrant a stop of the vehicle. This allows the driver to be stopped and identified. However, once identification is made, the stop must be terminated unless some other reason arises. And you can also see State versus Pitcher, where it's referenced, and State versus Gordon in 1996. Pitcher's 2006, if you're going to Google that. And don't get confused. You are allowed to stop the vehicle, but you're not allowed to continue on with the motor vehicle stop once identification. You have no reason to be stopping this person once you've uncovered that the person driving is not the person who's suspended. So don't misinterpret the case law on that. I don't want you guys getting into a situation because you read it not understanding what it is. Now, new case law came out, I think, 2 days ago. And was it 2 days ago? It's June 6th. Oh, five, 7 days ago, a week ago. We had a class. We're busy last week, so I'm going through it, found some stuff. This is a Supreme Court ruling for New Jersey, guys. This is going to be a New Jersey thing. I'm going to give you the gist of what happened. It really doesn't change much, but if you happen to find yourself in these circumstances, here's some advice that I'm going to give you off of what this ruling says. Basically, what happens is it's Willingboro police, wherever that may be. Sorry, Willingboro, if you're in the group. I'm not picking on you. This is not a time to cast mud towards anybody in their actions or what they did. I'm not judging anything. We just know that whatever was done here and how the courts ruled, we just have to adjust and work within how they want things done. So what happens is a girl's at a bus stop or somebody's at a bus stop, a guy or a girl, and they get mugged for their phone. When the cop gets there, they turn on the Find My iPhone app. And as they get close to the house and they pinpoint the phone where it's supposed to be, the phone gets turned off. So the cop starts looking around the house. He looks inside and sees the case that was described by the victim in a bedroom. So he finds an open window, climbs through, and under the pretenses that the perp might still be inside, he makes a warrantless entry into a home to look for a stolen item. So after that, after they go into the house, they find the guy's hiding in a bed upstairs under some covers. They handcuff him, bring him down. I don't know whether or not they read Miranda, but I would say at that junction, if you're handcuffing somebody in their home and you've developed enough probable cause to employ handcuffs, I would suggest that's probably a good time to start reading Miranda. So he brings him down. They bring him downstairs. Then the family shows up at home, and the older brother begins to cooperate with the police and says, "Hey, look, your brother, we believe, committed this robbery." And the kid says, "Well, did you find the phone?" And they say, "No, we didn't find it." So the cops say, "Okay, the older brother says to the cops, "Well, if it's not in his bedroom, it's probably in my other brother's bedroom." The guy literally brings the cops to the bedroom, opens the door, and finds a cell phone. The guy's charged with secondary robbery. They try to appeal it at the appellate division. Appellate division upholds the police actions, but the Supreme Court upholds some of the police actions. Let me tell you what they were about. So it says here, neither exigency nor the hot pursuit doctrine justify the officer's warrantless entry here. So what does that mean? There was no exigency. Let's start with that one. There was no emergent circumstances where they were allowed to, they had probable cause, but where they were allowed to enter into this household, which is supposed to be free from violations of Fourth Amendment, to retrieve an item. You'd have to have some kind of emergent circumstances. There has to be somebody's life in danger. Pretty much that's going to be just about, or the evidence would have to be at risk of destruction. So that didn't exist here. So the first thing they're saying is, look, the cops were not allowed to climb through the window because they saw the cell phone case. What they really should have done was stop, hold the house, call for a search warrant, and then get a search warrant to enter into the house based on the probable cause they already had. All right. Now, that could change in a lot of different circumstances. Or hot pursuit. This robbery didn't happen, and then the cops started chasing this dude, and the dude ran into the house and closed the door behind him. That's different. Hot pursuit, especially with a felony, would allow you to enter into the house and apprehend the suspect. We didn't have that here. They came a few minutes later after this incident happened. It was now an ongoing investigation. It says, however, the defendant's brother's actions did not constitute state action and were sufficiently attenuated from the unlawful police conduct to preclude application of the exclusionary rule to the evidence. So what they're saying is, all these things happened, and that they were trying to say that, well, the defendant's brother was an agent of the police because they urged him to try to help him find the phone. And what they're saying is, no. The guy acted on his own. The police, although they went into the house illegally, they shouldn't have done that. But still, the discovery of the phone is still admissible because the guy voluntarily gave it to the police. Let's see. So in some of the ruling here, it says here the court does not need to consider whether the officer's pursuit of defendant facilitated by his use of the Find My iPhone application falls within the purview of the hot pursuit doctrine because the doctrine does not apply for other reasons. The state failed to prove the police had any basis to believe that the defendant would injure anyone inside the house or the officers themselves. So waiting to obtain a warrant would have been unreasonable. So what they're saying is you should have waited for a warrant. Likewise, the state did not show the officers had any reason to believe the defendant would or could destroy the phone. Neither exigency nor hot pursuit justified the warrantless entry here. And at the end, it says here, defendant's brother is clearly not acting as an agent of the state when he searched for the phone. Unlike Skrotsky, defendant's brother's actions were completely independent of the officer's investigation. The mere presence at Officer Center by itself does not indicate police coercion or influence, and no evidence in the record supports the defendant's brother's search was casually or temporarily connected to the police misconduct. Defendant's brother's unprovoked decision to search for the phone himself is an intervening circumstance that breaks the casual connection between the unlawful police entry and the finding of the phone. The brother's actions were voluntary and unsolicited by the police. The phone is immune from the exclusionary rule. So it worked out well, half well for the cops. And the other piece that came out was, comes out of the appellate division level. I don't see it going any further past this. It has to do with a Howell police officer, which is pretty close to my office here. We stopped somebody, leaned into the car to listen because he couldn't hear what he was saying. He broke the plane of the window, right? You're not supposed to break the plane of the window. That's considered a violation of the Fourth Amendment. But it was momentarily. And when he did, he smelled marijuana. They searched the car and found marijuana. The court said, look, a momentary lean into the window to try to hear what the guy was saying was not a violation. It was so minimally intrusive that we don't consider it a violation. So if you're running into that, I wouldn't suggest saying you couldn't hear everybody on motor vehicle stops. But if that circumstance does arise, so far the appellate division, and I think it's an unpublished appellate division case, but they're ruling in the favor of the police in that one. So two good pieces of case looking out for New Jersey this week. Hopefully you guys are finding value. Again, I don't think the first one really changes much, but if you run into those circumstances, now you know how to act. You need to know how to write a search warrant. I'm going to write that down. We're going to do a video on how to do search warrants. If there's anything I can answer for you, please reach out to me. Don't feel bashful. If you're wondering something, there's somebody else who's wondering something. You want to encourage everybody to get your questions in so we can get everybody on the same page. And I'll do the research if I can. If I don't know the answer, folks, I will not provide you the answer. Well, thank you, Bradley. That's nice. Hopefully we'll be seeing you on the 4th of July. Anyway, guys, have a great night.